The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Dick Hayden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the latest issue of Sports Illustrated Kids, and I believe that is the March-April 2021 issue. We're going to get started with something that is of quite a big shot, you might say. A good size article, but it's going to tell us what's going on with football for the coming year. Every NFL's team's biggest offensive need. And this is an article from March 17 by Anish Achanta. It begins with the Arizona Cardinals draft a replacement for Patrick Peterson. So this is going to be team by team, their biggest offseason need that they've got to fill. So for the Cardinals, Patrick Peterson will enter the 2021-2022 season at 31 years old and well past his prime. The Cardinals will need a younger CB to replace him and to pair next to Brian Murphy, such as South Carolina's J.C. Horn. Next up, the Atlanta Falcons. They need to find Matt Ryan's replacement. The Falcons had one of the league's worst defenses last year. But with Matt Ryan already at 35 years old, a quarterback is by far their largest need. The Falcons pick at number 4 overall will have a chance at drafting their next franchise QB. The Baltimore Ravens add playmakers for Lamar Jackson. Baltimore's divisional round defeat showed that they rely too heavily on their rushing attack, more specifically, Lamar Jackson's rushing attack. They are in need of weapons for Jackson in the passing game, and luckily for them, they will find plenty in the draft and free agency. The Buffalo Bills add edge rushers. Buffalo's defense proved stingy throughout the season, but would greatly benefit from a consistent edge rusher to pressure opposing quarterbacks. There wouldn't be an immediate fix for them this offseason, but they could look to draft a player such as Miami's Jaylene Phillips and develop him into that role. Carolina Panthers figure out quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater was decent in his time as a starter last year, but the team ultimately ended with a 5-11 record. In a quarterback-rich draft, the Panthers should look to use their number 8 overall selection on their next franchise player. The Chicago Panthers are looking at a situation where they need to boost their offensive line. Throughout 2020, poor quarterback play distracted from an even worse offensive line. With number 20 selection, the Bears should look to draft a power run offensive tackle such as Michigan's Jalen Mayfield to fit their run-first offense. The Cincinnati Bengals upgrade offensive tackles. Joe Burrow's season-ending injury in Week 11 wasn't shocking given the offensive line he was behind. Drafting Oregon's Pini Sewell with the number 5 pick would be a good start to ensuring Burrow has a long and successful career in Cincinnati. The Cleveland Browns improve the linebackers. Cleveland is in desperate need of a true middle linebacker to effectively stop the run. The Browns could look to address this need in free agency or draft a player such as Tulsa's Zaven Collins. The Dallas Cowboys improve secondary. Dallas's defense was historically bad to begin the 2020 season, mainly because of their lack of speed and athleticism in the secondary. In order to prevent faster wide receivers from dominating their defense, the Cowboys should look to spend their top 10 draft pick on Virginia Tech's Caleb Farley and or sign Adoree Jackson. Denver Broncos improve the offensive line. Offensive tackle Garrett Bowles enjoyed a breakout season in 2020 for what was an otherwise weak Broncos O-line. Denver's number 9 pick could be well spent on another tackle to complement Bowles. such as Northwestern's Rashawn Slater, the Detroit Lions' long-term quarterback. Whether Jared Goff is the franchise QB or not will decide what the Lions do with their number 7 overall draft choice. If Detroit decides to stick with Goff, then a wide receiver such as Alabama's Jaylen Waddle could be in play in order to replace the potential loss of Kenny Golladay in free agency. If Detroit decides Goff isn't the guy, the pick will almost certainly be used on a QB. The Green Bay Packers need to improve the CB2 position. The Packers have arguably the best cornerback in the league in Jerry Alexander, but not much else. The Packers should look to find younger, more athletic talent in the draft, such as Northwestern's Greg Newsom II, to fill this need. The Houston Texans need to move on at QB. By now, it's common knowledge that Deshaun Watson does not intend to play another game in a Texans uniform. The real challenge for Houston will be finding a trade partner and a new signal caller. The Indianapolis Colts are in need to find a deep threat WR. With a T.Y. Hilton aging, the Colts are in need of a player to produce explosive long yardage plays for newly acquired quarterback Carson Wentz. The players such as Florida's Kadarius Toney could be a great selection for Indy at number 21. Jacksonville Jaguars upgrade the safeties. Assuming the Jaguars select Trevor Lawrence with the first pick in the 2021 draft, the safety position will be their largest hole on an already porous defense. TCU's Trevon Moehring can fit in nicely with Jacksonville with the number 25 pick, a selection they acquired from the Rams. Kansas City Chiefs, they better upgrade the offensive line. Even though they were missing their two starting offensive tackles, it was obvious to anyone who watched the Super Bowl that the Chiefs need to do a better job protecting Patrick Mahomes. Luckily for KC, there will still be plenty of offensive line talent for them to choose from at the end of the first round. The Las Vegas Raiders draft pass rushers. In 2020, the Raiders only generated 21 sacks, fourth worst in the league. In need of a consistent edge threat, LV should look to Michigan's Quitty Pay or Georgia's Azeez Ojulari in the draft. Improve the offensive tackles is the focus for the Los Angeles Chargers. In order to ensure the healthy career for Justin Herbert, the Chargers have to do a better job protecting him from pass rushers. Names like Virginia Tech's Christian Derrishaw should sound intriguing to L.A. in the mid-first round. Still in L.A., we'll look at the Rams. They need to free salary cap space. With the extensions of Cooper Kupp and Jalen Ramsey, the Rams are playing a dangerous game with the league's salary cap. They already resurrected Ramsey's deal, but they may have to do more. The Miami Dolphins, they need to draft a wide receiver. The Dolphins will be in a great position during the draft as they hold the third overall selection. Whether Miami will use that pick or trade down is still in question. But targeting a dynamic wide receiver such as LSU's Ja'Marr Chase or Alabama's Devonta Smith shouldn't be. Minnesota Vikings draft interior offensive line. Running back Dalvin Cook was among the league's best in 2020. Even with a relatively poor interior line, if the Vikings draft a player such as USC's Elijah Vera Tucker to solidify the guard position, Cook could be borderline unstoppable. And how about the New England Patriots? Well, add playmakers to offense. New England had only 12 passing touchdowns in 2020, tied for league worst. They came out aggressively in free agency, signing tight ends Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, but could still do more. Boy, those folks really miss having the other players that they had up until last year, if you know who I mean. New Orleans Saints find Drew Brees' replacement. With Brees retiring, the Saints are back on the QB market, Luckily for New Orleans, any QB they bring in will be put in a position to succeed. New York Giants add weapons on offense. For the Giants to determine if Daniel Jones is their QB of the future, they must first give him a chance to succeed. Adding speedster John Ross on a low-risk deal is a good start. New York Jets determine Sam Darnold's future. The Jets hold the second pick in the draft, and they need to decide whether they want to reset at QB or continue with Darnold. Whoever is under center will benefit from the addition of wide receiver Corey Davis. Philadelphia Eagles find a wide receiver to take the pressure off Jalen Hurts. In his limited time as a starter last year, Jalen Hurts was the entire offense for Philadelphia, whether that was running or passing the ball. A stud wide receiver from the draft or free agency would make Hurts' job much easier. For the Pittsburgh Steelers, well, they need to revamp the running game. With an aging QB in Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers cannot afford to have another poor season running the ball. Whether it's addressing the offensive line or drafting a younger running back, the Steelers need to recreate the running game that brought them success in the 2010s. Replace Richard Sherman. That's what's facing the San Francisco 49ers. Sherman is still technically a sound cornerback, but he can't keep up with the younger, faster receivers at this stage of his career. They re-signed CB Jason Verrett, but he needs a partner. The Seattle Seahawks draft pass-blocking offensive tackles. Russell Wilson will have to face J.J. Watt, Chandler Jones, Aaron Donald, and Nick Bosa 6 times in 2021, while already being the most sacked QB since he entered the league in 2012. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Well, what's their challenge? Keep the band together. There's not too much the Buccaneers can do to improve their already solid roster heading into the 2021 season. They've brought back Shaquille Barrett, Tom Brady, and Rob Gronkowski. A good start. Tennessee Titans draft an edge threat. Even though they brought in Da'Davion Clowney last season, the Titans only registered 19 sacks in 2020. Texas's Joseph Asai would be a perfect fit. And finally, the Washington team, I think they're now called the Washington Football Team, draft a consistent wide receiver. Terry McLaurin has proved to be a top wide receiver for Washington in his first 2 seasons. However, Washington's new QB, Taylor Heinicke, will need more than just one option. So it looks like all of the teams have some interesting challenges ahead of them as they go into preparing for 2021 season. Let's move on to an article titled Kid Reporter, a Q&A with Coco Gauff. Coco Gauff became the youngest person to qualify for the main draw at Wilmington as a 15-year-old back in 2019. And now the 16-year-old tennis star continues to create a positive impact on and off the court. And as she was preparing for the Australian Open, which kicked off back on February the 8th, Sports Illustrated kid reporters Anna Label and Aisha Bediola chatted with Gauff from across the world via the Zoom. So let's see what they all had to say to each other. SI Kids, is it intimidating to make the jump from being a junior to going up against top-ranked tennis players in the world at only 15 years old? Coco says, yeah, definitely. For my first few pro tournaments, it was intimidating, just because everything was so new and different. I would always watch everyone on TV and see them playing. But when it's actually your time to play, it's a completely different experience than as a spectator. To be honest, I was just grateful to have the opportunity to see how good I could do. SI Kids, what is it like being ranked in the top 100 next to someone of your tennis role models that you looked up to as a kid. Coco, it's really cool, and I always knew that one day I could accomplish this goal, but probably not so soon, for which I'm really grateful. SI Kids, what is it like being coached by your dad? What has been your favorite tennis memory with him so far? Coco says, having my dad coach me is honestly one of the best things ever. I mean, we probably get into more arguments than the average coach and player just because he's my dad. Other than that, it's really great. My favorite moment with him, honestly, I have a lot, but probably was when I won the French Open Junior Tournament. That was probably my favorite memory because that was my first big win ever at that level. He was super proud of me. My second was definitely walking to the court before I played Venus at Wilmington. We always imagined that moment, and he used to always talk about it growing up. Oh, snap, all this talk we did when I was younger is actually happening now. On the walk to Wilmington, you saw all the champions, Serena, Venus, Roger. They have pictures of all of them on the wall. It was really intimidating, but he really calmed me down before going on to the court. Well, how and when did you get your name Coco? So my dad's name is also Corey, and my parents also wanted their first child to be named Corey, Corey/Cori. Actually, no, I take that back. My mom wanted her first child to be named that. But my dad said if I were a boy, he wouldn't have named me Corey, Corey, because he didn't want a junior. My nickname came about because we both can't be called Corey/Corey, Corey/Cori. That would be confusing. I believe it was my aunt who said, oh, we should just call her Coco. When my dad was growing up, people used to call him Co, so I guess they just said, oh, Coco's a cool name. Ever since, I've been going by Coco. For sure, most people used Coco, then Corey. Well, how hard is it to juggle junior year of high school while still playing a professional sport during the pandemic? What is it like having your mom there to help you along the way? Coco, or Corey, says, definitely that's the most challenging, especially with time zones and trying to figure out when classes are. There have been times when I've had to wake up at 3 a.m. to go to class because of the schedule and the time difference. Having my mom travel with me is also something that I am grateful for. She goes to most of my tournaments, but sometimes misses some because I also have two brothers. She's here with me in Australia now, which I am super grateful for, because my team is mostly guys, so sometimes you just need another girl with you. What were you feeling when you beat Venus Williams at only 15? And how your tennis career changed after that Wimbledon in 2019? Well, I remember the night before I talked to another tennis player. She's retired now, but her name is Mary Jo Fernandez. She had a really incredible career. I remember before I talked to her, I was just grateful for the opportunity, and I wanted to see how well I could do, and she completely changed my mindset. She was like, no, you have to go into this match thinking that you can win and believing that you can win. I was like, yeah, you're right. I was really just happy to play, but now I actually have to think about winning. Once I had that conversation with her, my mindset changed, and that probably helped me win the match. After the match, I was just relieved that it was over, because I see a lot of times on TV when the underdog is so close to beating that person who's supposed to win, and at the last second they slip up. I did not want to be that story. SI Kids, what are your professional career goals as a tennis player? And your life goals as Coco. Well, as a tennis player, I just want to be the best that I can be. I want to shoot for the highest goal possible, which is being the greatest. I always talk about this, that you can go as far as you want. Even if you aim for the moon, you can land on the stars. In life in general, I just want to inspire people, and I want to let them know that no matter where you are from or what you look like, you can go as far as you want. I think I'm an example of that. I live in Delray Beach, Florida, a small town. My dad used to always say that I was going to be a professional tennis player and do all these great things. When you hear somebody talking like that, it sounds like baloney. But I guess he was right. Well, what has kept you so involved and motivated to speak up about racial justice and making sure everyone is treated equally? Coco said, my biggest influence on taking a stand on it was my grandma. When she was growing up, she was the first black girl to integrate her high school. And she was telling me stories about it. The one thing she said was, we are still protesting the same thing that I was protesting when I was 16. I just wanted people to understand, no matter how young you are or how famous you are, you have the right to use your voice and state your opinion. That was my biggest message to get across, because I believe now that Gen Z and the youth have a stronger voice than maybe we think we have. I think it's important that we understand how to use it. Well, how are you encouraging other people to use their platform and continue the conversation? For me, it's social media as the biggest platform that I use. Even if you have 100 followers and maybe 10 of those followers share whatever you posted, that can end up reaching 1,000 people, and they can keep sharing. You guys have seen how viral videos blow up out of nowhere. Social media is such a big platform, and that's how I think I encourage people, especially us young people. We love social media, and yes, it's nice to post funny videos, but we can also share stuff to help people, too. How cool would it be for you to compete at the Tokyo Olympics at only age 17? Oh, that'd be really cool, and it's a goal of mine, said Coco. I'm hoping that with my next couple of tournaments, I can do well enough so I can qualify. The Olympics is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I hope that I can qualify this year. SI Kids, do you ever think about being considered the future face of Women's Tennis Association at only 16? And Coco responded by saying, I know it's something that people talk about, but I never really think about it. I try to do my best to stay in the moment and enjoy what's going on now. Thinking about the future is great, but if you get too caught up in the future, you won't be able to enjoy what's going on now in your present situation. So I try to stay in the moment and enjoy what's happening now and think about the future a little bit later. Way to go, Coco. I think I'm going to ask you to take a little quiz here today, kids. The mystery athlete in this issue. We're going to find out who he is. Let's see if you know who he is. I know, because I looked and saw the answer, but I think when we get to clue number three, you're going to get a real good idea. Here's clue number one. The mystery athlete grew up in Richmond, Virginia, where he played baseball and football and basketball in high school. And he later attended North Carolina State University before transferring to Wisconsin. Any idea who it is? Well, let's look at clue number two. The Colorado Rockies picked the mystery athlete in the fourth round of the 2010 draft. And he had a 713 OPS in Class A that year. Getting a little closer? All right, well, here we go with clue number three. After choosing football over baseball, the mystery athlete led the Seattle Seahawks to a 43-8 victory in Super Bowl 48 in 2014. And the mystery athlete is... Yes, you got it. It's Russell Wilson of the Seattle Seahawks. And we here at the North Carolina Reading Service, know quite a bit about Mr. Wilson, because in that first clue he said that he attended North Carolina State University. Well, that's right here in Raleigh, North Carolina, where we are broadcasting from. Now, here's another good one for you. this would be a trivia challenge. The most watched TV broadcast ever in the United States remains the Apollo 11 moon landing in July 1969, which was seen by more than 120 million Americans. Which sporting event do you think holds the number two spot for the most watched TV broadcast ever? A, Super Bowl in 2015. B, Super Bowl in 2016. C, the 1998 NBA Finals game number 6. And I've got to tell you that I have absolutely no idea which the answer is. But I can look in the back of the next page, and I can tell you that the answer is the second most watched TV broadcast ever in the United States was Super Bowl in 2015. Everybody wanted a piece of that action, I think. What do you guys think, huh? Perhaps the same. I find it fun to get to know more about some of the athletes that are around. Here's one, DK Metcalf, and he's from the Seattle Seahawks as well. He happens to be a wide receiver. DK is 6'5", 4 inches tall. He weighs 229 pounds, and he was born on December the 14th of 1997. His hometown is Oxford, Mississippi. Okay? Well, Metcalf set a Seattle Seahawks record with 1,303 receiving yards in 2020, his second season with the team. He had 10 touchdown receptions and added two more in Seattle's lone playoff game. In his first postseason appearance in 2019, Metcalf set an NFL rookie single-game playoff record with 160 receiving yards. The team record that Metcalf broke had been held by Steve Largent, who set it back in 1985. Largent later went on to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives. That's quite an accomplishment. Well, we've come pretty much to the point in time when we have to leave you today as we've completed our program. We have hope that you have enjoyed today's episode of Sports Illustrated Kids. My name is Dick Hayden, and I'm reading for you for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and be sure to tune in next time for more Sports Illustrated Kids.